morning. You know, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens with Joel in that, because, you know, I think about in my life, the idea actually of totally unplugging for everything actually brings most of us more stress than anything. You know, when you think about it, most of us are plugged in pretty much 24/7. You know, whatever your current technology of choice is, you know, whether it's a cell phone, laptop, BlackBerry, iPod, you know, instant messaging, whatever it is, we are plugged in 24/7. We have a constant stream of communication and data and information coming toward us. So the idea of totally unplugging from that, what is going through most of our minds? I could never do that. I would never catch up. I would never catch up. If I unplugged for a week, if I unplugged even for a day, I would never catch up. And you know, there's some logic to that. You know, the amount of information, the amount of data that comes our way, we do know, boy, if I don't chop this stuff back on a daily basis, I would never catch up if I totally unplugged. I heard recently, you know, trying to quantify the amount of information, the amount of fresh, new, original information that we get coming our way. Anybody here know what the term is they use, you know, for, you know, a lot of information, usually a computer storage term that's used to represent, you know, a whole bunch of information? Anybody? Gigabyte. Gigabyte is you know, the term that that's been used. Well, you know, so they invented the term gigabyte to talk about just an obscenely amount of information. But now it's being replaced. It's being replaced because apparently the only problem with gigabyte was it's not big enough. It's not big enough. So they invented a new term, which is an exabyte. And an exabyte is 1 billion gigabytes. An exabyte is 1 billion gigabytes. Now, to kind of quantify that for you, in 1999, they estimated that all of the knowledge in the history of the world, all the data, all the images, all the music, all the text, all the information from the beginning of the history of the world up until now, through 1999, was represented by 12 exabytes. 12 exabytes is all the information through 1999. The problem is they now estimate we are adding original new information at a pace of 2 exabytes a year. A year. So every 6 years we're doubling the amount of information or data that ever existed in the history of the world. And we wonder why, you know, sometimes, you know, we get stressed out thinking we would fall behind. And even if over half that information are party photos of Paris Hilton, that is still, it's still an awful lot, you know, it's still an awful lot of data and information, you know, that's coming toward us. I know in my week, one of my kind of little pleasures, increasingly rare pleasure, you know, that I have in my life every once in a while is you call your voicemail and you get, you have no messages. Oh, it's like, you know, it's like a drowning man and somebody handing them an oxygen mask. It's like the fresh air during the day. Oh, no messages. You know, and you feel like, you know, you're actually, you're able to breathe. You're able to breathe. We have so much coming at us that it seems impossible to deal with. Now, you know what? The thing is, it's not just information, is it? I mean, we are not only over-informed and over-connected, but we are overstimulated, we're overworked, we're over-entertained. We are just live lives, you know, that are just completely over. And, you know, it's not just us that are feeling this. This is something that, you know, in the past 5 years or so, we've started to recognize as a significant challenge, you know, just in where we are. It's just that we are living at a pace where we do not have room to breathe. We have a lot of good things, sometimes all good things that we have, but they're so much crammed in that we don't have any room to breathe. And it's become a problem in our lives. So much of a problem, you know, like any problem that happens in America, what do? Well, the early signs that it's a problem is now there's been all these business models that have been developed to help us get room to breathe. You know, this entire business category has been developed to help us simplify our lives. You know, here's one. You know, I looked on the, you know, just the newsstand just this last week. Anybody ever seen this? Real Simple magazine? Anybody read this? Anybody? Now, I've noticed a disturbing trend. When it becomes apparent I'm about to mock something, people don't participate, you know, when I ask them to raise their hand. So I want you just to be real, real honest here. This is your pastor talking, you know, but how many of you have ever read Real Simple? Let me see your hands. Okay, yeah, there we go. All right, safe place, you know. Real Simple. I saw this, you know, so this came out about, about 4 or 5 years ago, this magazine came out. Been one of the most successful magazine launches in the history of the world. Real Simple magazine. I saw this on the shelf and Real Simple, Life Made Easier. I thought, wow, I need that. I could use life and $4.50, you know, so I bought it. You know, Real Simple, Life Made Easier. Now I want to say, in all fairness to them, I've not read the whole thing. Okay, so I'm not going to be totally fair. I've not read the whole thing. Mainly because in October alone there's over 342 pages of simplicity for us to, you know, to kind of deal with. But, you know, real simple, life made easier. So I looked at it now, as best I can tell from what I have read so far, as best I could tell, life made easier consists of some mix of the Cadillac SRX, a GE profile oven, California almonds, and cotton, which is apparently the very fabric of our lives. You know, we get this, and, you know, this, now, it's not that all those things are necessarily bad. You know, it's not that, you know, that they're bad. Although, be honest, I'm not quite sure about the Cadillac SRX. So if you have one, you better just loan it for me for a week and I'll get back to you, you know, with my spiritual opinion, you know, on that one. What happens? We say, you know, our life is overbooked. It's overrun. We've got too much. So what's the answer? We need more. You need more. You see, the problem in your life is you just don't have the right stuff. If you had the right stuff, life would be easier. Life would be simple. So often we fall in this trap where we think that the answer to our problem, the answer to having no room to breathe, is that we actually need more. And I know this is, you know, something that we all can fall into. I mean, how many times have we thought that our life would be better if we just had more square footage? If we just had more storage on the hard drive? If we just had more options in our retirement plan? If we just had more channels to choose from? And our default mechanism is that we just must need more, or at least more choices. But what if that wasn't necessarily always the case? There's a doctor who, I don't know, about 10 years ago or so, started to have some real concerns with what he was seeing, that these lives we've fallen into with no room to breathe, the impact it's had on his patients' lives. And he started to look into this a little bit more, did a lot of research, and he's written on this subject in some pretty fascinating ways. His name's Dr. Richard Swinson. Here's what he said in a book he wrote called The Overload Syndrome. He said, getting more and more of everything is wonderful, as long as that's what we need. That's a challenging thought. Getting more is wonderful, not necessarily a bad thing, as long as that is what we need. What if in some cases we actually needed less? What if in some cases less would make our life better? You know, anyway, when you think about it on the internet, primarily when you look at those business models that have really made hay of the internet, they have tended to not be people who created new content or new things for us. They've tended to be models that found a way to help us filter the enormous amount of data and information that there is. Whether it's Google, it's Yahoo, one could even argue Amazon.com. Not creating new content or new things, but finding ways to filter what's out there for us. Now, I admit, this is a particular challenge in my life because I am somebody who likes information. You know, I am somebody who likes data. Whether I'm shopping for a VCR, you know, or I'm planning a trip for the family, or I'm even, you know, choosing, you know, trying to find grass seed to fill in my lawn or whatever. My thing is, what I have found is, you know what the only thing better than getting a whole lot of data about something is? Getting a whole lot more. You know, that's, you know, kind of the only thing that trumps that. So I am somebody who can get almost into kind of brain freeze with the amount of information. I am the master of the spreadsheet, you know, kind of put it all together and try to, you know, figure out everything. And I found that that's actually kind of a piece of my personality that I found recently that I carry through when I speak. That when I speak, sometimes what I can do is get so overwhelmed by, oh boy, there's this book I read, or there's this I saw, or there's this I try to cram, you know, it all in. And one of the most painful things for me when I speak is the last couple of days when I have to cut stuff out. Like, oh, that's not going to work. You know, I have to cut that out, cut, you know, kind of that out. Now, be honest with you, get a little vulnerable with you here. I don't always do that hard work. You know, so sometimes I just try to cram it all in anyway. Sometimes I get up here and I just try to cram it all in, and it can be, you know, kind of data overload. One cost, though, that I didn't think, didn't really think about that I was having this is, well, there's a speech pathologist who comes to Crossroads. And she contacted me a few months ago. She said, boy, you know, I really, really enjoy with you when you speak, but there's something that always bothers me when you speak. You're doing some really damaging things to your throat. You're really going to trash your voice, and you're going to have some significant problems over time if you don't change some of the habits that you have and do some real damage to your throat. I thought, and she said, you know, if you'd like to, I'd be happy to get together with you. I thought, well, that'd be wonderful if I'm doing something, you know, that's damaging. I want to know about it. So I got together with her, and I was thinking she was going to say, you know, you need to drink more water. You know, and certainly staying hydrated is important, so you need to drink more water. And I got together with her, and that, apparently that wasn't the issue. She said, the problem is when you speak, you tend not to breathe. Okay. You tend not to breathe. She said, you do things like you get really passionate about a point and you just push and push that point all the way past the point where you have any oxygen left in your throat, and you just keep pushing and you strain your throat to get out the rest of that thought. You don't breathe enough when you speak, and it's going to cause some real problems to your voice over time. You're going to have some real problems. Now, I was very grateful to her. You know, I was like, okay, you know, well, if there's something I can do about it, and she's been working on me with some exercises, that's great. But at the same time, I got to admit, it's a little concerning. You know, I know that we all need to be constantly changing and growing, you know, and I certainly have my list of things I want to get better and change, things I want to change in my life. Be honest with you, breathing was not on my list. You know, I was not, you know, breathing. Now what? Now I need to learn to breathe. You know, okay, well, what's next? What's going to be, you know, 201 class? Chewing gum and walking, you know, will that be it? Okay. I realized I had forgot how to breathe. And I think that's a pretty good definition of most of our lives. We don't realize it. We don't have an outside expert that comes in. But if they did, if they could step from the outside into our lives, they'd say, you know what? You've forgotten how to breathe. Now, here's the biggest problem with it. It works. It works for us. We can keep pushing through. We can keep straining, and we can make it work. Because our bodies are this incredible thing. So my throat, my voice responds when I push it past the point of having air, and I can still get words out. And our bodies are these incredible things God's given us. They adapt. They adapt. And so our bodies in our lives, when we run at a pace where we don't have room to breathe in, what happens with our bodies is our bodies say, okay, you're not going to give me enough air. You're not going to give me enough room to breathe. But I'm going to adapt. And so our bodies learn to live on something else. It's called adrenaline. And we learn to live on adrenaline. And so we go through life at this pace where our bodies are having to lean in adrenaline every day just to keep going. Now, you know, it's adrenaline's not inherently a bad thing. You know, adrenaline is, you know, another one of these gifts that God's given us for our bodies that, you know, can help us out when we're in a jam. You know, adrenaline is the classic fight or flight hormone, you know, that your body pumps out extra measure of it when you're in a jam and you need to respond to something. So, you know, got a, you know, you got a really stressful meeting coming up or something, or the classic fight or flight thing, you're in danger. Your body pumps out more adrenaline. It sends more blood to certain parts of the body. So you become, your senses become heightened, you become more aware, kind of breathe faster, and you can do it. And that's why God gave us adrenaline to be able to do that. The problem is we were not designed to exist on adrenaline as a staple. And it's become the regular part of our diet, more so than breathing. Adrenaline has become part of... Now, I want to be clear here. I am not just talking about our work here, although certainly that's part of it. You know, certainly that's part of it. A lot of us, you know, our work days, you know, we work, we have these overjammed, overstuffed, constantly plugged in work days. Overjammed, overstuffed, constantly plugged in work days. But then only split up by the occasional overjammed, overstuffed, constantly plugged in weekend. We're learning to live on adrenaline, and it's having a significant impact on our bodies. We've found that this thing that in short doses God has given us to bless us so that we can get out of a jam, when we lean on that over long-term periods, that same adrenaline actually becomes poison in our bodies. It actually becomes poison and starts tearing down our bodies. Just this, if you just grab Newsweek off the shelf this week, what's on the shelf right now, almost the whole issue is about stress in your heart. And one of the things that they say in it this week is that it's now clear that adrenaline itself can wreak havoc on the heart. And you know what they're talking about is not just what we would call bad stress and bad adrenaline. Yeah, if you have a big business meeting come up and you pull an all-nighter for it, or you have a really stressful breakup with somebody, you know, and all that, you know, that's all stress and that's, you know, kind of adrenaline that can cause damage. They're also talking what we would refer to as good adrenaline. So people who you know, are kind of redlining it all week and then for fun on the weekend they go rock climbing or parasailing or whatever that requires all this more adrenaline, that same stuff is also destroying their body. We are not created for a constant, constant rhythm of adrenaline. This is the way a friend of mine that wrote a paper on this, emailed me this to me last week, and here's how he described it. Over extended periods of time, adrenaline in the blood becomes toxic. These toxins in your blood over a period of time produce tumors and cancer. Your bloodstream is not built to handle adrenaline for long periods of time. We're not created for it. And so we're actually abusing our bodies, and we are ignoring the way God designed us when we lean into adrenaline all the time. Now, what happens? you run at a pretty good pace, and you run at adrenaline for quite a season of your life, and slowly your body starts to respond and need even more. And like a junkie getting a fix, you need even more adrenaline, because the same amount of adrenaline that was pumping through your body isn't enough even more. So what do we do? Do we step back, ask some hard questions? Do we maybe make some changes? Do we take a break? No. Our motto has become, why take a break when you can caffeinate? You know, why take a break when you can caffeinate? So what we do is we need even more of that adrenaline in our body. We consume this legally available addictive drug that's available on every street corner that actually constricts our blood vessels that pump even more adrenaline into our system. And so we get, you know, into the cycle. We get in a cycle, not enough adrenaline, and then we caffeinate, and then it constricts our blood vessels, and our body even artificially pumps even more adrenaline into our body. And, you know, you may think I'm exaggerating here, but I have heard that in some pockets of our society, it's gotten so bad that sometimes people need even a little cup of this just to sit through a church service. I've heard it. Is that vanilla hazelnut you have there, or how's that? Construction. How's that working for you? Good? Yeah? All right. Good. You know, it's not all caffeine or all coffee is bad. But when we lean into it on a long-term basis, it has a ravaging effect on us. We're constantly artificially pumping more and more adrenaline into our system. So much so that the Centers for Disease Control now estimate that of all the deaths that happen in our country between the ages of 1 and 65, 50% of them are directly related to stress. Half of the people in our country that are dying between the age of 1 and 65 are dying because of stress. Centers for Disease Control estimates that 80% of all the money we spend on healthcare in our country every year, 80% is for things that are directly related to stress. Folks, we are suffocating. We are doing it to ourselves. We are choking ourselves. We've got no room to breathe. Now you wonder, you know, how does a generation of probably the most educated, the most well-informed, and certainly at least of average sanity, you know, how does a whole group get to this place? How do we get to this place where we're constricting our lives so much, we're depriving ourselves of so much oxygen that we're actually suffocating? Some of us do it in 5 years, some of us do it in 40 years, but our choices are actually toxic. How do we get there? That's actually what we're going to take a look over these 4 weeks of the series. We're going to take a look at how we got there and how do we possibly get out. How we got there and how we possibly get out. And what we're going to lean into is we're going to go to the same places, the same kind of theory that we did during the sex series. Where we're going to take a look back and we're saying, well, maybe the designer of our bodies, maybe our creator has given us some advice within, you know, kind of our owner's manual for our body that would tell us, you know, how we can live life in a way that optimizes this creation of our bodies he's given us. So we're going to do the same thing. So, you know, starting this weekend, we're going to take a look at how our creator talks about these things and what he's designed our bodies for and how we should work accordingly. You know, let's take a look here, for instance. You know, start off with, you know, what our creator has to say. Your lips drop sweetness as the honeycomb, my bride. Milk and honey are under your tongue. Okay, I admit, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I just thought, you know, after 4 weeks of the sex series, you know, you might come in here and if I didn't throw out some kind of saucy Bible verse at you, you know, you'd feel all disconnected. So there's your saucy Bible verse for today. All right, but before you put the real one up there, though, there's this point in the Old Testament of our Bible, you know, which records God's interaction with the nation of Israel. There's this point where he's kind of laying out how they're to live their lives. And he gives them these commands for how they're to live their life. And kind of the summation of them, the early distillation of them, collected in our Bible, we refer to them as the Ten Commandments. Now, when we think of the Ten Commandments, we tend to think of, you know, don't steal, don't lie, don't kill, don't commit adultery, that kind of stuff. And that's all in there, certainly. But if you look at the Ten Commandments, what's interesting is in the early place that it was given in the Bible, in the Old Testament book of Exodus, the string of those commandments, there was more room, God devoted more room, more words, more connect the dots, I want to get clear on this, space to another commandment than he did to not stealing, not lying, not killing, not committing adultery. All four of those rolled in together don't take up as much room as this one command that he gives. Here's one place where it's referenced in the book of Exodus. Exodus 34:21. 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. Now, in the original place where this is given, it goes on, and he really connects the dots on this thing. But this is another place where he talks about six you shall labor, on the seventh you shall rest, even during the plowing season and harvest. And what God seems to be doing here, this was a commandment. This was not optional. It was a commandment. He was saying, I know you. I created you. I know how your bodies best work. I've given you these commandments to optimize not only your relationship with me as your creator, but to optimize your relationships with each other in community. And the way you are designed is for six on and one off. Six on and one off. God designs this rhythm. 6 days you shall work, 1 day you shall rest. Year around, all the time, six on, one off. And he designs this rhythm for our life that we're to hit if we want to be who he created us to be. Six on and one off. Six and one, six and one, six and one, this constant rhythm. And the cool thing is God is so consistent because we feel this rhythm in our life. He's designed us for rhythm, and we see rhythm, you know, whether it's in nature, we see it in great art, we see it in architecture, we see it in laws of physics, we see it in music. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why music moves us so much. Music tends to touch some part of us. It tends to touch some part of us like nothing else does, and just tends to move us in that way. So I thought, you know, what I would do here. Now I know we have. I read the Connect cards every week, you know, and I know there, you know, all these Connect cards, you know, that people have been putting. You know, when's Brian Wells going to sing? You know, when is Brian Wells going to sing? You know, over and over, they're always, you know, asking that. You know, I've never heard him sing. I can only imagine he must be incredible. So when is he going to sing? Actually, I've never actually seen these Connect cards, but none of the other staff claim to have seen them either. But I know they're out there. I know they're happening. I think they're just being screened by my handlers or something. I'm not sure. So there's this thing of rhythm. That music seems to move us like nothing else because of rhythm. Like, for instance, my favorite notes, you know, C, D sharp, F, and F sharp. Oh, boy. Well, yeah. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. They are some of the best notes. How many of you, your favorite notes? Come on, just be honest. How many of you, your favorite notes? C, D sharp, F, and F sharp. Come on. Oh, you are missing out. You are missing out. C, D sharp, F, and F sharp, some of the best notes in the history of the world. Oh, you are, you know, and so I decided, you know, when is Brian Wells going to, I thought, you know what, as I'm doing the series, you know, you folks work so hard. You work so hard. Why don't we give him a treat? Now, why don't we give him a treat? Let's get me over to the organ, you know, let's give him a real treat. So, you know, decided that we'll do that. So I guess what I'll share with you then, you're gonna always remember this moment of your life, because I'm gonna introduce you to C, D sharp, F, and F sharp, okay? This is some of my favorite notes. Okay, so here we go. Just get ready. All right. C, D sharp, F, and F sharp. Huh? You see what I mean? No? Well, let me try that again. Maybe I need to turn it up a little. There. I mean, man, aren't those awesome? Awesome notes. They put all the other notes to shame. You're not with me. Well, I have a friend who's a songwriter, and he tells me when he writes a song that what's more important than the notes he puts in is the notes he leaves out. He calls it the importance of missing pieces. That what's infinitely more important in a song than the notes you put in are the notes you leave out and the space. He calls it allowing a song to breathe. He says what's more important when he writes is giving space. And he says when you do that, then the song really comes alive. So you got to put space in there. You don't get rhythm without some space. And you put space in and it can breathe, and then it really comes alive. So, you know, let me try that. Let me just try that for you. Because maybe I, you know, all right. Same four notes. C, D sharp, F, and F sharp. Let me try that again with you, see what you think. Same notes. You give a little air. You give a little room to breathe. You give a little space and you get rhythm. And then you get music. Now, for you young punks that weren't around in the 70s, okay? That was Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple, okay? You'd be well served to buy it and listen to it if you want to understand what made this country great, okay? Yes. N, M, N, one, all right. Take the same notes. You add space and you get rhythm. But instead, what do? We find a note. Maybe it's a good note. Maybe it's a great note. We find a note, and what do with it? Very similar to what my daughter Grace, when we first got Gracie a keyboard about a year ago, and she's 6 years old, first got her a keyboard, and maybe it's for Christmas. And she would play it, and she would go downstairs, she'd play it, and then she comes from, Daddy, I did a song, you gotta come hear it. You know, I'd come down, you know, sure enough, and then this would be her song about 90% of the time. Listen to this. I would be like, well, Grace, wow, you really did something there. You really, you know. Scratch music scholarship off the potential list of, what she'd do is she'd just hit the same note over and over again. What do we do in our life? We find a note, maybe it's a good note, and we hit the same note over and over and over and over again. We work, 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 work. Or some of us, we party, 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 party. Or we get in a Bible study, and another one, and another one, and we're in a Bible study, Bible study, Bible study. We get involved at Crossroads, and it's all Crossroads, 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 Crossroads. We've got no rhythm. We've got no rhythm. We're just hitting the same note over and over and over again. And that's not how God created us. He created us for rhythm. He created us to value giving some room to breathe in between all the things. It's no good to just hit the same note over and over and over again. The answer that our Creator gives us is in the rhythm. The problem is we've lost our sense of rhythm. We've lost our sense of rhythm. And so we hit the same note over and over and over again, and then we wonder why we would never describe our life as making music. We've got no rhythm. We've got no rhythm, so our lives never sing like our Creator intended them to. And so our lives become defined by paycheck after paycheck, expense report after expense report, meeting after meeting, activity after activity, channel after channel. We've got no rhythm. Now, I know if you're like me, when I first kind of, encountered this in the Bible, my classic place that I went was, well, you don't understand my situation. You know, you don't understand my work. So, you know, you're sitting there, and I would imagine that's probably most of your, well, you don't understand mine. You know what? I don't. Let me just say that, I don't. There's no way I can understand all your situations. I can only tell you that I have found that every time I go against that principle for six on and one off in my life, every time I go against that rhythm for any extended period of time, it's cost me significantly. Whether it's cost me physically, it's cost me relationally, it's cost me economically, it has cost me. And I can tell you, I have been there. I mean, in my previous work, I had more than several occasions where people showed up in the morning for work and they noticed that I was still wearing the same clothes from the night before because I had never left. And it doesn't change. Let me tell you, you want to get sanity in your life? Let me give you one good tip for your life. Don't start a church. Okay? I have times where I get onto my email, spend 45 minutes hacking away at it, and when I get off, I have more emails than I did when I got on. Say, oh, well, this isn't working. Clearly, if I stay off, I'll have less than if I get on. Maybe that'll work. And you know what's interesting? We all have ways of discounting this command from God. Oh, I don't understand my situation. Which I think is fascinating that God kind of anticipated that. He kind of anticipated that in the way he lays out this decree. Now remember who he's talking to, the nation of Israel, which they will, you know, they will, as they establish their presence and their permanent presence after they stop wandering in the desert, they will live and die based on what comes out of the ground. They will be an agrarian society, that they will live and die based on the crops that they produce. Now, in an agrarian society, what are the most stressful times of the year? The most red-lined, high-tension times of the year as far as workload. It's when you plant and when you harvest. When you plant into your, that's where the term seasonality came from. We talk about seasonality to businesses. Seasonality, that's where that term came from. Was from agrarian societies, from you know the planting and the harvest. And take a look again back here how God says this. 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. Even during the plowing season and harvest. You know what? If you're a CPA, just insert, even during tax season, you must find rest. If you're a law student, even during first year, you must find rest. You're a stay-at-home mom, even during the toddler years, you must find rest. You're an entrepreneur, even leading up to the IPO, you must find rest. You're a Cincinnati Bengal, even leading up to playing in the 2006 Super Bowl, you will need to find rest. Yes. That's something called cheap applause. You know, and I figure I've ripped on him enough. I need to, you know, throw something back to him. And we look at that and we say, well, I have no exceptions. What is that? You're right. You know, that seems awful constraining. That seems awful strict. That seems awful legalistic. You know, folks, this is not a punishment. This is not a punishment. This is the inventor of our body saying, I know the way I've designed you. I designed you for rhythm. We need the rhythm of rest. That is how our Creator has designed us. And you know, I know the first place that we tend to go on stuff like this. When we hear this, the first place we tend to go is guilt, right? I want to let you know, our goal during this series is not that we move everybody from being overloaded with no room to breathe to being overloaded with no room to breathe and at least feeling guilty about it. You know, that's not where we're trying to go here. But what I need you to know is that the stakes are incredibly high. Just looking at the medical information, the stakes are high. The stakes are incredibly high on this. You don't want to get to the point where you wake up and you're 35 years old and you realize the last 10 years is just a blur of emails and channel surfing. You know, you don't want to be 50 and wake up and realize that the kids are strangers. Or you don't want to just not wake up because your body just decided that's enough, I can't take anymore. The stakes are high. And so during this series, we're going to look at this and we're going to do some challenging things for each other. And it may take you to kind of an uncomfortable place of experimenting with what the rhythm of your life needs to look like. And it may feel awkward. You know, I have these, you know, voice exercises that I need to do and they feel silly, they feel awkward. I don't like having to learn to breathe all over again. But the fact is, I've realized it sure beats the alternative. And our alternative is suffocation if things don't change. If you don't make significant intervention in your life, next year it will be worse than this year. We've got to find that rhythm. We've got to find that room to breathe. So I thought what we'd do, you know, today, just in a few minutes we have left, is I just wanted to take kind of a minute just to kind of give everybody kind of a little chance to breathe. Okay, so if you just close your eyes. And I just want you to think about two things. The first thing is most of you are thinking about stuff that you have to do right now. That might be a clue. The first thing I want you to think about, though, is the last 30 days. Have you had rhythm? Does it feel like your life was music? Does it feel more like a grind? The last 30 days, have you had rhythm? And now I just want you to think about, if you haven't, what will be the cost if you extend that trend for 10 years, for 20, for 30? What has been the cost, maybe, or what will be the cost? And what's the chance that your Creator might have something to say about that? God, we ask that you would challenge all of us over these 4 weeks, that we would be able to, even though most of us hear this and we have little hope for any change, that you would maybe help us see through the fog of our busyness. You'd help us see through just a little more clearly over these next 4 weeks. We might be able to see the answer to your rhythm in our life. And that we would look back a year from now, we would look back and we would realize the place of health that you have us because we found your rhythm. Because we found room to breathe. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Have a great weekend. Give yourself a break.